Hello and welcome to Business Beat. I'm Nick Adams. Coming up, we'll tell you about an effort to reconnect small communities and big cities in an old-fashioned way. But first, making milk is a notoriously volatile business. Many are calling the government price support system broken and asking for a better safety net in the 2012 Farm Bill. Still, there's debate over how much the government should step in to help in tough times. Harvest Public Media's Kathleen Masterson traveled to numerous dairies to hear from local dairymen.
Milk prices were so low in 2009 that many farmers were basically paying to make milk. Not only that, but National Milk Producers Federation spokesperson Chris Galen says between 2007 and 2009, the combined equity of dairies nationwide dropped by $20 billion, down about 20%.
And what we've heard time and again is that, boy, I barely hung on by the skin of my teeth in 2009. We can't go through that type of situation again.
The market nightmare stemmed from a host of factors: skyrocketing feed costs, struggling global economies, lower demand, and outdated government price supports that, for some, were too little too late. Here at Terry Von Manen's dairy in Sioux County, Iowa, the workers have finished the milking and are spraying down the parlor. Van Manen's dairy has about 600 cows, and he says his operation certainly felt the squeeze in 2009.
Definitely, it was an eye-opener when you have to borrow money to pay your bills. It was a tough year.
But Van Manen isn't complaining.
Without it, where would we be today if we did not have that? We'd have so much milk, we wouldn't know what to do with it. So yeah, do I look forward to poor milk prices? No. Do I fear them in some respect? Yes, I do. And yet, when they come, to me, it's the process of supply and demand.
But other dairymen worry they couldn't survive another 2009. The National Milk Producers Federation is pushing for a new approach.
What we'd like the Congress to authorize and have the USDA to implement is a new safety net that's not tied directly to the price of milk, but actually would help insure against poor margins. And we're defining margins as the difference between the milk price and the cost of feed.
At that point, some government supports would kick in, says spokesperson Chris Galen. And to stabilize market prices, the U.S. Department of Agriculture would notify farmers they won't be paid for 2% of their production, giving them a few months to scale back. Participation would be voluntary, Galen says. But for a dairy farmer to get the margin insurance, he'd have to agree to production cutbacks in tough times. But not everybody supports that plan. The National Family Farm Coalition says the government should be managing milk production to stabilize milk prices. Spokesperson Paul Roswadowski is a dairy farmer himself. He says the problem with the other plan is it would start to rein in farmers' milk production after milk prices get really low.
So you're giving the farmers an actual a double kick in the behind. They're already getting low price, and then they have to reduce it to 98% or whatever they'll get paid for.
The coalition supports a bill introduced as Senate 1640, which would have the USDA monitor and control milk supply at all times to keep dairies from overproducing. That's similar to how it works in California, the nation's largest milk-producing state. Dairyman John Taylor of Point Reyes, California, says the state gives each dairy a production goal for the year.
Yeah, there's two sides of it, as you said. There's price support and supply management. Both of them go hand in hand. I think you need to look to the individual dairy owners and say, are they overproducing or are they getting hit with high input costs beyond the average?
But ag economist Dan Sumner, formerly of the USDA, has qualms with plans that ask the government to manage the milk supply.
When prices are low, it tells people that would otherwise be wanting to grow. Well, who wants to grow when prices are low? People that are, in fact, so efficient they can still grow. Or the young or the vigorous or the people that see a long-term future in the business. What it does is take people my age and say to us, you get to be grandfathered in to keep what you've got. And the next generation, people your age, are told, no, you don't get to compete.
It's too soon to say what the odds of this bill passing are, but supporters are hoping to push it through with the 2012 Farm Bill. I'm Kathleen Masterson, Harvest Public Media.
There's an engine at the station.
A few decades ago, rail tracks laced Iowa's countryside, linking even the smallest communities to big cities across the nation. But many of those tracks are now silent or turned back to adjacent farms or bicycle paths. but a group of farmers and businessmen have come together to preserve their rail connection to big city markets. Dean Borg reports for Harvest Public Media.
It's been 7 years since folks around Forest City, Iowa, have heard a train whistle in their town, but Iowa Northern locomotives are again switching rail cars alongside the co-op elevators towering grain silos.
We're very excited to be in that part of the state.
That's the Iowa Northern's carload marketing director, Amy Homan.
The people there are excited to have us back in the area, and they love seeing our engines going up and down that line.
Iowa Northern is partnering with some farmers and business interests who've taken about 20 miles of rail track being abandoned by the Union Pacific Railroad. To Forest City Co-op Elevator Manager Randy Brewster, retaining trains on that track is business survival.
People know if the rail leaves, it never comes back. And they've seen a lot of it happen in the area because we've had other tracks that the lands went back to the farmer.
So Forest City and nearby Garner Grain Elevators, along with recreational vehicle manufacturer Winnebago Industries and some other investors, pooled their money to buy the 22 miles of railroad track. And there was government assistance in reducing the out-of-pocket costs.
We got two grants, one from the federal government, one from the state government for $1 million. And then we went out and raised the rest of the money from investors.
But this isn't just nostalgia. Brewster currently sells corn to nearby ethanol plants, but worries.
If we lose our local ethanol market, which is Hanlontown, which is a small plant of 50,000 bushels a day is what they're grinding, you know, they're going to probably be the first one to go down, and we need to have somebody that's got a big appetite for a couple 100,000 bushels.
The big appetite is ADM's huge corn processing plant in Cedar Rapids, nearly 200 miles away.
Today, we can move corn from Forest City down to Cedar Rapids by train. It's costing us about 19, 20 cents a bushel. Truck, if I go to like Lakota, which would be about 45 miles, that's cost me 12, 13 cents. So we can go a lot further with train, a lot more efficient.
Iowa Governor Terry Branstad calls the rail purchase a win-win.
As a result of it, they're shipping train loads of grain from both Forest City and Garner to ADM. And, of course, that's increased the price of corn in that region. And it's also given ADM another supply of corn. They process the equivalent of 3,000 acres of corn every day. So that's a pretty big deal.
And a pretty secure deal. Because after 10 years, the Iowa Northern Railroad will buy the 22 miles of track. In Forest City, Iowa, Dean Borg reporting for Harvest Public Media.
Thanks for listening to Business Beat. I'm Nick Adams.